Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, whoa, howdy. I have got a sneaking suspicion that this here microphone is a dying. Or not the microphone, but this here mixer is a dying. Here in a little bit, maybe you'll notice a dramatic change in the tonal vocal quality when it all sort of goes away. I don't know, but we shall see what we shall see. I think I'm a little addled here. I think I just blew out an eardrum. God, never a dull moment. I've been teching all day long. Not that you could tell, but I have no idea, for instance, if the Skype line will work or not. Real hot mic, Sparky. thanks, Sparky. Tell me, sounds good for now, Bob. I appreciate it. We'll find out. It's Friday on the Front Porch, the 29th day of January, 2016, and we will find out in a little bit whether or not the Skype line works. You may recall that as we began the program last night, in medias res of the program last night when Carol called in, that it suddenly didn't work. I don't know if there's a demon down in there or what, but no, it had... gone. So all we can do is kind of wait and see. Never a dull moment. But that's the spice of life, isn't it? So welcome. Like I said, Friday on the Front Porch. Here in about an hour's time, we will fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and we will thereafter take steps to see if the damn thing works and go from there. It looks like I've got a weekend's worth of tech work ahead of me. The only thing I can really think to do is to go back to factory defaults and just reset everything on this mixer. And what a joy that's going to be. But such is life. So that's that. Anyway, welcome aboard. We'll get going, like I said, with the group here in about 57 minutes or so. Good evening. If you'd like to be in the chat room, it's free, it's easy, and you're welcome to join in. Good evening to Anatole and Little Gray and R.L. Smith, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky. I presume Lottie will be along in fairly short order, I hope. Between those two... I can't remember the last time a wingnut was able to sneak into the chat room and one of those two didn't just zap them. We've got good metering. Thank you very kindly, Ron in the frozen north. Well, okay. 5x5 up here in the relatively temperate north, Ron says. I might even be able to catch more than 15 minutes of the program tonight. Well, yay, I certainly hope you can. Dwayne says, I bet it's in the mic cable. I bet it's not. It's not a cable issue. I've had several suggestions since last night, all of which, while I am grateful for the suggestions, were not the actual problem or the actual answer. Something is going south. And in light of the fact that we've had two or three problems and they all route, but they all, it's probably the mixer. But you know what? We're going to soldier through. That's what we do. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where the chat room is. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in, and you'll be right there as part of the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat that takes place during the live portion of the program. There's some Java issues, and so if you've got a machine that doesn't like Java, and this seems particularly to apply to Mac devices, sorry. But that's that. We are also a listener-supported operation. And, you know, we're trying to close the week, close the month, as a matter of fact. I mean, come Monday, that'll be February the 1st. And the month ends on a Sunday. And at this point in time, we need to raise $320 this evening to finish okay for the month of January. Thank you very, very kindly. That's 10 at 32, 32 at 10, 16 at 20, 8 at 40, etc. My head is not up to the ciphering this evening because I'm just a little addled from playing with chords and swearing at things. And, well, you know how that goes. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas from FYINation.com pointing out, saying, I can hear you if you can see this. It works. I hope it does for you. Skype isn't the nicest thing in the world. You know, that's the reason we stick with Skype, is it has been very much reliable for years and years and years and years. And this isn't necessarily a Skype thing, I don't think, so much as it's, well, I mean, but one of the interfaces that we did Skype with, half of it is dead, or maybe Windows 10 has decided it doesn't like it anymore. I don't know. But anyway, we're a listener-supported operation, and the way we keep all this going is with you, and occasionally some from, well, over the years, etc. Here's a neat little note coming in from Jason down in Florida. So cool, I can listen to you at Disney World in Orlando. Stitcher rocks. So Stitcher is back and functioning. That's a wonderful thing. We're also available on TuneIn if Stitcher doesn't work for you. Wow. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, tells me it's 60 degrees in Hooterville and it's headed my way. Amazing. Carol suggesting maybe the tech gods smited her. I don't know. Maybe. I don't think it was on Carol's end. But we'll find out. We will certainly find out. I could use some 60 degrees, and I think it'll be here by Monday or so. So anyway, if we can raise up $320 this evening, we will finish the month okay, you know, right. And that means, that means that the brand new Beat the Swede All Year Long challenge will come into play. You may recall our buddy Scott in Sweden sent us a note last night saying if we finish January to the good, that's $50. February to the good, that's $60. March to the good, $70, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It all starts with January. And, that ends tonight. So thank you very kindly, by the way, to, and I don't like to get names wrong or pronunciations wrong, but thank you very kindly to Tirani for helping out this evening, earlier in the day. That's how come we've only got to deal with 320 to raise. Thank you very much indeed as well to Anne Marie. Thank you, Anne Marie. Also, why we've only got 320 to deal with. We closed the program at 340 last night. So this is all doable, and I just need to get my... I need to get my head back in the game. Ah, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand also letting me know 60 degrees in Kansas stand too. Does this mean that maybe, just maybe, the groundhog come February 2nd won't see his shadow and we won't have six more months of winter? Oh, who knows? Really? 21st century, and we're counting on little vermin to tell us the weather. Then again, Granny Clampett had a weather cricket in a matchbox, so who knows? But I followed through on my assertion last night. I've seen some news coverage during the course of the day. Did I say hi? I'm Bob Kincaid. Because if I didn't, I am. Anyway, I didn't watch the T-Rump thing, and I also didn't watch the weirdo clown arc thingamajig. So I guess I'm just uninformed. Tell me, did little Marco Rubio come out wearing high-heeled sneakers? Just like Loretta? No, from Get Back? No. Carol pointing out, oh, come on, spring starts March 21st, just like every year. Yeah, but we got climate change to deal with now. You reckon maybe the... Well, never mind. So, I don't know, maybe Ted Cruz went and anointed a lucky member from the viewing audience? No. So did Jeb Bush grow a spine? No? Oh, so in other words, nothing of any note whatsoever happened in the GOP debate, and if y'all want to talk about it later, we can. I'll do my best to keep up. You know what I did instead? I did what I said I was going to do. I watched, wait for it, The Mind Wars, American Experience on PBS. It's available for viewing to just about anybody who wants to see it now. There's a wonderful app for your mobile device, your tablet, your iThis, or whatever. And Agnes and I sat and watched The Mind Wars. And because we're here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, there was a certain hominess about it. And because we had, as a sort of philosophical backdrop to it, the recent arrest of several seditious... Wait a minute, that's Monty Python. Several seditious scribes from Caesarea. We had to do the sort of English class compare and contrast. Steve in New York noting, Bob, did you need to watch professional wrestling matches between fancy big name whoever versus Joe Blow to know how it turned out or how interesting it was? Precisely. The Mind Wars, however, is a fascinating documentary. And it is probably something that should be taught in every, dare I say it, high school classroom in the United States. Maybe here in the middle of the second decade of the 21st century, it might be worthwhile to remind students, young scholars, that everything has not always been peaches and cream, as if it is now, or that maybe there was a precursor time to what is coming at us, and there is, honest to God, no better way of learning that than seeing what happened and what are called the Mind Wars of West Virginia. If you ever wanted to see an absolutely stark example of what happens when pissed off people take up guns against other people who have millions and millions and millions of dollars and control of the government and control of the military, you really want to take time for this. I mean, I have not been in any wise paid to promote this particular documentary. We don't do that here. We don't have any advertising. Even the very beginning of the program, when it says brought to you by Cold River Mountain Watch. Well, that's because I care so much about the work that Cold River Mountain Watch does. There's no money changing hands. That was not always the case. Once upon a time, yes, but not for years. 4 years, as a matter of fact. So there are no sponsorships here. There is nothing that colors or in any wise influences what gets said or what gets covered, not covered, etc. No. Carol pointing out with regard to the Mind Wars, they told the story in such a truly human way. It's so prescient. It is. It feels like there's the possibility out there that everything old could be new again. No, not maybe not as overtly brutal. But the whole idea of the oppression and the manipulation. Yeah. It centers, if you don't know, it centers on a story of a young man who was found by Mother Jones, Mary Harris Jones, who in her own right is a fascinating study in hardship and determination. She found a young man when she was organizing in the coal fields of West Virginia by the name of Frank Keeney. He'd been working in the mines since he was 12 years old, nine, since he was nine. And she saw something in him. And she handed him a book and told him to go up on the hill and read that there book. And he had a hungry mind. There were so many good minds that were wasted and have been wasted over the generations here in Appalachia. So many good minds. But he did read the book, and he became, in short order, an organizer of miners, and had a hunger for knowledge, and eventually became an outright socialist. And I don't say that like it's a dirty word, because the brutalities of capitalism as it was practiced in the West Virginia coal fields. For people unfamiliar with the history, if you watch this documentary, you'll be shocked. You'll be shocked. Interestingly, one of the photographs they show from the era actually hangs down at our local really, really, really bad pizza joint. It is of two men bellied up to a bar, and the bartender behind, and the liquor bottles stacked on the shelf, and little details give you a clue for how to guesstimate the date of the photo. For instance, one knows that it had to be before 1913 because West Virginia engaged in the prohibition experiment long before the entire country did. So that means it was before 1913. But that photograph is of a pool hall in a little community that doesn't really exist anymore except to be a place by the side of the road called Winona, West Virginia. Yes, Gerald, you've got the place exactly. Geno's, home of some of the worst pizza you will ever eat in your life. I would say it competes head to head in terms of awfulness with gas station pizza, which is pretty difficult because gas station pizza is a frozen crust that they throw a bunch of toppings on and run through a conveyor belt oven. This has fresh crust that they throw toppings on and run through a conveyor belt oven. And no, 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 no. But we eat it from time to time because sometimes, well, you just do. It's the only thing resembling a restaurant that we've got over here as we watch this little town sort of fade into nothingness. Hey, by the way, did you know this little factoid coming to you courtesy of Ron in the relatively temperate north? Groundhogs are tasty little vermin. Herbivores, the young of the year, are very tasty when dipped in buttermilk, coated in a mix of salt, pepper, and a bit of cayenne, and fried up in a big old cast iron skillet. Goes great with collard greens, smashed taters, and fresh biscuits with some salted butter. I'm just saying. Yum, yum. Hey, Grandpa. What's for supper? Ron also pointing out, I watched that program. I've seen it before, and it was just as powerful the second time. No, this had never aired before, Ron. This was brand new. Maybe some of the history, maybe, but no. The Mind Wars, as a function of a presentation of the American experience on PBS, was brand new. I would recommend it as an educational program, if only to give today's crop of nose pickers some idea of what their grandparents had to go through to put us on the road we're on today. It's not even their, maybe my generation's grandparents, but my parents were older, so it's not even that. It's more like this generation's great or great-great-grandparents. The added benefit, Ron continues, is that the mine owners could easily be viewed as equivalent to today's Republicans. The mine guards and detective agency could be perceived as representing all the second-tier fascists willing to do their bidding, and the miners could represent the working stiffs paying for all the government they don't get. Well, that's very true. Very true indeed. Yeah, that's a good word, Gerald. Gerald describing Gino's Pizza as slimy. Mm-hmm. It, precisely. But anyway, I watched the Mind Wars with the backdrop of these clueless jackasses out in the Northwest, out in Oregon. Are those four still there? The four little stoners? Little right-wing stoners? I think they are. They were still trying to negotiate their way out. And apparently the one guy that the FBI had a want on was for misdemeanor pot offenses in Wisconsin. And the last I read, they'd said that it had been recommended that they just kind of let that slide. And the one thing that I would be willing to let any of these little wingnuts slide on is a cannabis offense. I mean, honestly, really? Yeah. So that's where that is. And with regard to that, I have since watched, and I imagine many of you have as well, the video, the helicopter video. Oh, yes, it can. Marty says, no pizza can be worse than Little Caesars. Yes, it can. Gerald, can I get an amen that Gino's slimy pizza is worse than Little Caesars? Can I get an amen, Gerald? Yeah. Internet latency being what it is, I'll get the amen here in a minute. But yes, Marty. Oh, yes. But the video of the death of the wingnut, what's his name? Bok Choy Finkum, Lavoy Finkum, is a sort of instructive tale in stupid. The man did not have to die. He died of his own choosing. Now he had a truckload of other people with him. Remember, one. So he chose to put their lives at hazard. And if you watch the video, or if you've already, then you know what I'm talking about. The roadblock is there, and Numbnuts decides that he's gonna go all action adventure movie, Fast and Furious, whatever. And he's gonna take his 4x4 pick-em-up truck, and he's gonna go around. He's gonna launch through the snow up and around the roadblock and keep on a running to get up to John Day, Oregon, where there's some patriotic freedom lovers who are gonna give him sanctuary. Right. Only it doesn't work like that. he gets stuck in the snow. But in the process of getting stuck in the snow, he comes damn near to running over and killing one of the people who was at the roadblock. So before he had ever exited the vehicle, this dickweed had committed attempted vehicular homicide. I mean, if you watch the video, the guy gets knocked down. And so there's that. One, he'd already tried to kill somebody with his vehicle. Two, he had other people in the vehicle whose lives he put at hazard. And then three, this. And this goes out to all the gun goobs out there and the people who think that, for instance, a state like mine, West Virginia, will somehow be better off if everybody who can muster up the purchase price can carry a concealed weapon. He gets out into the snow. He sees that there's one person with a firearm aimed at him. And what's he doing? If you watch it, you'll see that he's reaching across his body to try to get to his freedom protector. Now, it turned out he had a 9mm semi-automatic handgun in his pocket. But he reaches for the wrong pocket in a moment of extremis. In a moment of panic, this guy who thought that a firearm was a better friend to him than any human being, this guy who cared more about some bizarre and twisted fantasy of a right-wing fascist interpretation of the Constitution, believed more in that than he did the children that he was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to afford to create a home for down in the state of Arizona, reached for his gun the wrong way. At first, he has his hands up, okay? Then he sees that there's somebody with a gun pointed at him, so he thinks that somehow, I guess, triggers his right to self-defense, because ain't nobody got no lawful authority except the sheriff of the county. And then he kind of gets his hands back up when he realized, oh, shit, I reached for the wrong pocket. I forgot where my freedom protector is. And then he turns around and sees there's another guy coming at him out of the woods, and he reaches for the right gun that time, and the guy coming out of the woods didn't have anything to do with it, and he shoots him down like a dog or like a human being who has no respect for himself or anybody else and put a whole bunch of people's lives at risk and tried to kill another individual already. And see, that's how La Choi Thinkum, or La Voy Thinkum, met his sorry end. And that is a cautionary tale for all these people who think that they're just heroically, they're going to be a good guy with a gun, and they're going to grab their freedom protector, and they're going to protect freedom, and they're never going to shoot the wrong person, and they're going to be just dead-eyed dickhead. Right. In a moment of, crisis, when the chips, as they say, were down, Thinkum couldn't remember where his gun was. All that time, all that fondling, all that fervent adoration of firearms, and when it came right down to it, he didn't know where it was. And you know, if he hadn't flounged, there might be more than one dead person out there. But he did, and mercifully, there's not. But with all that as background, the Mine Wars did provide a decidedly decidedly moving counterpoint because those guys took up guns back in the first decade of the 20th century, and it went on for 15 years until it got completely out of hand. And John L. Lewis, the president of the UMWA, said, "Don't do it. Don't start. Don't march on Logan." And Mother Jones said, "Don't do it." And they did it anyway. And having availed themselves of violence, having killed a few mine guards, you know, gun thugs, here and there, they got their own, some of their own Union brothers killed, and got their hopes for decent treatment crushed. Absolutely crushed. So that's the story. But being historically inclined, I watched it with a couple of thoughts in mind. Because other things were happening in that whole 1919, 1920, 1921 time period. And I sort of was inclined to compare and contrast, there it is again, Frank Keeney, who was the one who called for the armed march on Logan County, West Virginia, which was run like a police state. There's no getting around it. Can you imagine? I mean, I know we have our concerns about the national security state and the rising militarization of the police, and we all saw what went on in Ferguson, and we were all deeply disturbed by it. But can you imagine riding on a train, and there's a whole bunch of America who not only have never ridden on a train, but can't imagine it because there aren't any trains to ride on because, well, we can't do anything that intelligent in this country. Once upon a time, we were a country that said we had nothing to fear but fear itself, and now we're a country that just says we have nothing but fear. Apparently, that, too, was on display last night in Iowa at the pageant. I read somewhere that little Marco Rubio said ISIS was the most devastating, most terrifying, most bowel-wateringly fear-inducing jihadist organization ever on the history of the planet Earth. And do you know what came to mind for me? May 1453. And a dude by the name of Mehmet II, who put together such an army that that he was finally able to do what nobody in 1,000 years had been able to do, and that was breach the walls of Constantinople. Now, there's you, a powerful jihadist army. ISIS, with their machine guns and their pickup trucks, probably couldn't breach the walls of, you know, a soccer stadium. So just saying. But I did. I was doing some historical comparing and contrasting. And you know who I thought of? Because, see, those miners were so angry at what the mine guards were doing to them that they took out their anger on the mine guards. But, of course, the mine guards were just tools. They were just the tools of the capitalists. As often as not, you could get yourself hired as a Baldwin Phelps thug because you had a prison record for some gun violence, or you'd shown yourself willing to shoot at people somewhere else. The hiring standards were not really that elevated Mm-hmm. And so they being and this is not being mean. This is not a criticism, but being a not terribly educated lot, and in many instances being of the Scots-Irish borderer stock that Joe Bagent wrote so eloquently, they went after what they could see. And by comparison, what I began to think about was the man they called the Big Fella, Michael Collins, and the struggle, the bloody struggle for Irish independence and the beginnings of an Irish free state and what is now the nation, well, all except for that little pocket of Ulster, of Ireland. And the difference between the two is, one, Michael Collins and the Irish resistance were ultimately successful, whereas the miners in West Virginia at roughly the same time were ultimately an absolute failure. And they both resorted to the use of arms. Now, the Irish resistance started out trying to fight against the common British soldiers who occupied places like Dublin. But their strategy and tactics soon evolved when they realized there was no way that they could militarily go up head-to-head against the British Empire. And they realized that they had to go about things with a considerably higher degree of tactical comprehension. And so they stopped focusing on going after the grunts. And the grunts in this particular case would have been the mine guards, the thugs. And they started going after the higher-ups. And that's when they began to have the successes that led to ultimately led to the creation of, you know, Ireland as a nation among nations. And so you wonder if it ever occurred to the miners, instead of taking pot shots with squirrel rifles at the people who were immediately before them, you wonder if it ever occurred to them to go and try to, because one of the nastiest of the bunch of the plutocratic capitalistic owners was a nasty old creep by the name of Justice Collins. What if they'd gone after him instead? What if they'd taken out two or three CEOs, operators? Of course, insofar as I advocate nonviolence, I tend to think that they would have been crushed all the faster. But at the same time, the coal companies needed workers. And every time they brought in scabs, the scabs figured out pretty quick how awful they were being treated, and there was no loyalty there. One wonders. So I offer up that hearty recommendation that you watch The Mine Wars on PBS while it's still up and available for viewing online for free. Not at Netflix, not at Amazon, not at Hulu, but right there at pbs.org. Ron in the Temperate North says, I have indeed seen much of those film clips and stills in previous documentaries. I guess that's understandable since there can't be all that much still hanging around after all these years. If I factor in the fact that we remember and learn at least 70% of the information we require visually, I will chalk it up to the blurring of synapses that has apparently increased over the years. One of my takeaways from the Mind Wars is that some of the dentists back there were pretty damn creative. Sheriff Hatfield had a mouth that wouldn't have been out of place in Moonraker. And I was amazed. I had never seen this. I was amazed in seeing this to find out that there was actually motion picture film footage of Sid Hatfield grinning and smiling and joshing around with the members of what was then the for-profit media. By the way, Ron pointing out, Marco Rubio apparently also never heard of Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, or Kublai Khan, not to mention Tamerlane. But see, he specifically said jihadists, so that lets out Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, and Kublai Khan. It does leave the door open for Tamerlane, though, I believe, doesn't it? And it certainly leaves the door open for Mehmet II. And the breaking of Constantinople, which oddly enough, this is an interesting little point in history. You can make a compelling argument that because of Mehmet II's conquering of Constantinople, he saved Constantinople from itself. Yes, there was much murder and killing and looting and pillaging. And in fact, the early cannon that was used to breach the walls was designed and created by a European, white European guy, who went over and sold his services to Mehmet because the crumbling edifice that had once been Rome in Constantinople, it simply couldn't afford him. So understand, it's been that way with gun manufacturers almost from the very beginning. Services sold to the highest bidder. Oh, my God. Going back to the slimy pizza, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa says, I don't know, Bob. It says 5 stars on Yelp. Dear God, who did that? I suspect it's people from the home office at Gino's. I don't know any self-respecting connoisseurs of pizza. Who would give that joint? No. The iced tea, however, is quite good. Mm-hmm. So that's all of that. Thought you might find this interesting. Carol pointed out to me a moment ago that in regard to the foolishness. In Oregon, Carol says, I've just had an epiphany. There are no bootstraps on cowboy boots. Suddenly, I understand why those ranchers want free grazing on other people's land. Free land, free snacks, free sex toys. It's all become clear to me. They have no bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, Carol tells me that the goobers have issued a call to action to air their grievances. Is that what they've not been doing for the last month, for sake? But I think we do need to understand something. This country, probably far more than any of us realize, is awash in this kind of sedition and, I believe, treasonous intent. All over the place. I mean, the three percenters, the Oath Keepers, the Patriot Network, the Cloven Bundy, whoever's following him, the various and sundry so-called militias, which are nothing more than gangs of armed thugs. And hello, Daniel E. Musso Sr., just a year older than I will be this weekend, of East Kingston, New Hampshire, is now apparently a guest of the authorities on federal charges. He got arrested by the FBI this past Wednesday, having purchased from an undercover agent some, grenades. He was sort of testing the water because, caveat emptor and all that free market business. You got to make sure that you're really getting the goods from the guy you're buying from. So he started out just buying a few grenades. But he repeatedly told the guy who sold him the grenades, who turned out to be an FBI agent, I got another $200,000 on hand, and I'm hoping to buy some C4 explosives and maybe some rocket type stuff. Yeah. Now, here's how, and maybe they're better at this than you and I talking about it are. We're armchair quarterbacking, and I realize that, and we ain't necessarily experts. The FBI has been working on the case of Daniel Musso since last year, because it was early in 2015 that Musso went to a firearms dealer and had $6,000 in his pocket. And he had a list of stuff that he wanted to buy. He wanted him some guns, and he wanted a bunch of ammunition, and he wanted a gas mask, and he wanted grenades and rockets. Which, interestingly, you can't buy the grenades and rockets down to Friendly Fred's Gun Emporium. No, they don't have rockets and grenades down to Friendly Fred's House of Death. And the dealer said, "Well, what are you looking for?" And of course, being a right-wing POS, Daniel E. Musso, Sr., age 54, said, "I want the best you have." Mm-hmm. So the gun dealer did the right thing. He called the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, who then worked in tandem with the FBI to set up a meeting between Musso and an FBI agent who was pretending to have for sale grenades and rockets and stuff. And Musso said, I can sell a lot of these grenades here because I belong to a group of people who want to bring back the original Constitution. That's getting kind of Canadian, that accent, isn't it? Yeah, my up east accent really sucks. Bring back the original Constitution. I don't know. I guess Daniel E. Musso, Sr., 54 of New Hampshire, Stan, wanted to bring back the Constitution in which the guy who comes in second gets to be vice president. Because that's the original Constitution. There's some stuff relating to taxation that can't happen before 1808. That would be your original constitution. Yeah, but apart from that, the original constitution is the constitution you can read today, except these right-wingers. And most of them are registered Republicans. Let's not kid ourselves. They don't like the original Constitution. They don't like the Constitution at all. They want to try to figure out a way to worm and weasel around till they can just get themselves a new Constitution. And hey, look, that's why we've got a movement for an Article 5 Constitutional Convention of the States. And the precious little simpletons on our side who say, yes, let's do that. I'll tell you what, I'll bring the graham crackers and the Hershey bars and the marshmallows, and we can make s'mores. Anybody got a guitar? How about a harmonica? And don't forget the kazoos and the tambourines now, because we can march in singing, "We Shall Overcome," and we're going to get rid of Citizens United. Yes. Dumbasses. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Gerald informing me. No. The go-to place now is Bud's Gun Shop. Bud. Yes. So Daniel E. Musso got taken down before he could
And, you know, look, I'm not an authoritarian. Not by a long shot. But I want to give a little golf clap. Hear that? Little golf clap to the FBI for taking down this right-wing walking bag of human garbage. Because this guy wanted to hurt people. This guy wanted to kill people. In the name of something that isn't even definable. The original Constitution. Quit. And he said that he was worried about the government being aware of what he was doing. That is why I need some of this stuff. In case the, you know, get grenades to use on the government, in case the government knew that he was trying to get grenades. Yeah, sort that reasoning out. Ron in the relatively temperate north pointing out, our best hope is that the idiots trying to foment rebellion are all as stupid as the evidence suggests. And you know, they probably are. But they're not going to get a real revolution going. They're not going to succeed at that. But they may very well hurt a lot of people in the process of trying. At least in this country, the only hope we have is nonviolence. It really is. Because you can't take up arms against the government. They kind of proved that. I'm sure back home in Arizona, Stan, Lavoy Thinkum had himself lots of freedom protectors. Probably had gun safes. Probably had 30-06s and 30-30s and 270s and 280s and 6 and 7-8s and 9 millimeters and 10 millimeters and guns shaped like dildos and who knows what. When the government decided it was time for him to stop playing, he stopped playing. So, you know, trying to do this by force of arms, this is not 1919. This is a wired-up world where everything you do, everything you say, no matter how much Rand Paul bitches about it, is pretty much known. For more than 10 years, I've been doing this program and knowing that everything I say is being monitored. We do not... Well... We don't live in a world that has very much privacy. During the snowpocalypse of the last weekend, we were pretty much stuck here. No way I was going to get out on the road. That's part of having that big human brain. If the snowplow drivers can't get around, then I'm pretty sure that I can't either. You'd be surprised how many people don't sort that out, but oh well. But I just happened to notice, and it was an entirely an accidental sort of thing, I just happened to notice that why there's a live webcam that looks northward across, down the on the southbound side of US 19 over the New River Gorge Bridge. And it's live 24/7. Now, is my freedom violated by that? It's a camera maintained by state government in a public place. And I guess if you decide to go out and foment rebellion in the middle of the New River Gorge Bridge, they're going to be able to watch you do it. God damn it, George Orwell! 1984 is real! Maybe that means that we will never here in Fayette County, West Virginia, be graced with a visit from privacy paladin Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. I guess there's not a hell of a lot of privacy. You want privacy, you got to work for it. And so, you know, I realize that. Daniel E. Musso, age 54, apparently pretty goddamn stupid. But he's also just plain old-fashioned an asshole. Because it was back in 2013 when when some folks in New Hampshire had a rally over gun violence, and wait... Oh, lovely. It's going to be a great weekend. Yeah, my neighbor's fired up the coal. Tasty. I love the smell of brimstone in the evening. Oh, yeah, that's the good stuff, too. Gerald points out, okay, here's the problem with the preppers who want to take back the illegally and duly elected government. They end up like Lavoy Finkham. Dead, and the big bad government didn't even break out the good shit to take him out. So tell me again about how you're going to take back anything with your pissy-assed AR-15 against, say, a Predator drone. No, the only thing you're going to do with your pissy little AR-15 is try to intimidate other people who don't have AR-15s. That's what all of this is. All of this gun foolishness is nothing but an attempt at intimidation. It's the same thing the mine guards were doing, and it's the same thing that the miners were trying to do to the mine guards. Yeah, by the way, the Matewan Massacre, and I know many of you, it was covered in the Mine Wars, and I know many of you know what happened there. You know when shit got real and the Matewan Massacre went down, you know what occasioned that? That was when Police Chief Sid Hatfield served arrest warrants on the Baldwin thugs for being in violation of Matewan, and Matewan was an independent town, it wasn't a coal company town, served arrest warrants on them for carrying guns in town because it wanted to live in something, some semblance of peace, had a no-guns ordinance. And that's when the shooting started. What does that tell you about the people who... what does that tell you about the firearm fondlers? Huh? And, of course, these were little private armies, the Baldwin Felts so-called detective agency. They were private armies. You know, militias. Militias for hire. Militias for profit. Capitalist militias. Huh? Yeah. A note coming in from our buddy Jay Cruzen. Subject line, original constitution. Hell, Bob, I say give it to him. Original constitution, no amendments, no second amendment. Of course, it wasn't ratified that way, but as fucking stupid as these people are, they'd probably never notice. Yeah, you want the original constitution? Sure. Now, the original constitution has the Article 3 treason language in it, but it also doesn't have a first amendment, numbnuts. So not only are you not going to have a gun to use to intimidate the government, you're not going to have the right to say anything either. Charming, huh? No, they are, Jay Cruz, and you're absolutely right. They are dumber in the head and the hog is in the ass. But anyway, it was back in 2013 when they were trying to have a rally about gun violence. Daniel Russo first came to people's attention. Now, a fella who had lost a child to gun violence, well, he had some remarks prepared for the rally. And the purpose of the rally was to petition the government for redress of grievances, which these right-wing constitutionalists claim to be all about. But, well, the only speech they like is the speech they like.
We know that when there is a gun in the home of a domestic abuser...
Hey, excuse me, there's no sun. You should take your glass off. We can see your eyes. There you go.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. And what are you preaching here?
My rights.
Your rights. Which rights are that?
It's okay. It's all right. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay.
It is okay.
We can express our opinion.
Yeah, see, the guy who, what rights are you preaching about there? That's Daniel Russo. Dickhead. Because he believes in the original Constitution, and the original Constitution, of course, is where no one is allowed to say anything bad about the sacred, holy, precious, delicate feces of the people who love guns more than children. Behold your NRA. Behold your gun owners of America. And here's the fun part. He gets to go on and on and on. Can you say white privilege?
We know that when there is a gun in the home of a domestic abuser, a woman is 500 times more likely to be killed.
What kind of gun are you talking here?
And we know that in the States, where background checks...
A gun or a machine gun? What kind of gun, sir?
Yeah, what kind of gun do you? I mean, it makes a difference, you know. Yeah, when a woman who's being domestically abused gets killed, you know, it matters what kind of gun she. I mean, you're talking about a machine gun there? Is that what makes that statistical difference, eh?
No, I ain't gonna step back. Get out here. What kind of gun are you talking?
A guy tells him to step back. No, I ain't gonna step back. Get out of here. Now. Oh, never mind. Yeah, but you get the idea.
All kinds of guns.
Well, no, it doesn't say that in your speech. Go ahead. Let's see this.
No, Donald, it wouldn't be worth it. We're not going to give you your way.
It's not going to be worth it.
And we know now, we know that in the States where background checks are required for all gun purchases, there is a 38% decrease in the rates of homicide domestic violence. This is why I stood with others, fathers who lost their children in the Newtown shootings, to ask Senator Ayotte to change her vote. It is why I delivered petitions to her office signed by hundreds of New Hampshire voters to support stronger laws and limits access to guns and explosives by suspected terrorists.
Notice that there are a lot of people chanting in the background. Again, this is 2013. This is almost 3 years ago. And they're trying to drown out one man for simply saying that children matter more than their firearms fetish does. Tells you a lot about the gun people, doesn't it?
And it is why, just over an hour ago, I delivered a list of more than 6,000 names to Senator Ayotte's office in Manchester.
Listen.
He speaks the truth.
That's good.
The names I delivered were the names of young people like my daughter, Melissa. Sir, please have a little respect at this moment.
I am respecting
Thank you.
But if you had this speech in your mind, you wouldn't have to read all this propaganda shit in front of you.
You done?
No, I'm not done.
I'm not done either. They are the names of young children like the ones killed in Newtown on December 14th. They are the names of those who have been...
The kids killed at Newtown. If you didn't hear Mr. Musso, if you didn't hear Mr. Musso, that's all government propaganda. And by the way, has Alex Jones put out his false flag claim on the death of Lavoy Finkham? Because I mean, there's video there, and I'm sure that wasn't a false flag killing. That was a real killing. Remember Michelle Fiore, the woman who advocates bleach enemas for autistic children, was one of the first to say, the government shot him down with his hands in the air when he was on his knees. It was cold-blooded murder. So even when the gun nuts are going for their guns to try to shoot, no, they see that's that there it is right there. There is the heart of white gun nut privilege. They always get to shoot first. And even if he'd squeezed off a couple of rounds, even if he'd killed somebody, it would have been justifiable homicide because Constitution. I guess this country's always had a deep undercurrent of treason and sedition about it. But it ain't. We're not getting less. We're getting more. So we're at the 216 mark in this video from 2013. It goes on. You government propaganda, right? Yeah, you'll hear it.
My daughter, Melissa. Sir, please have a little respect at this moment.
I am respecting
you.
But if you had this speech in your mind, you wouldn't have to read all this propaganda shit in front of you.
You done?
No, I'm not done.
I'm not done either. They are the names of young children like the ones killed in Newtown on December 14th. They are the names of those who have been killed by a gun in 6 months since Newtown. They are the names that we need to remember, and that why Granite State's staters have spent the day reading these names out loud. I guess these names don't exist according to you. But the list is so long already, with a total number climbing higher today, is unacceptable. But one of the things that I learned from my daughter's death is that it is not enough to say this is wrong.
You're talking about this. You're not in truth. You're not in truth.
Daughter,
I'm fine. I don't need help. We must act to make it better. That is why I'm inviting Senator Ayotte to take a second look at these proposed laws and at the very least make suggestions to make them better and more.
The guy just got to walk away. Come up and harass a grieving father whose daughter was murdered, and then he just gets to walk away. Finally, police tased him. But that was 2013, and it didn't slow him down a bit, because he was plotting to kill other human beings in the name of a paranoid fantasy that exists only between the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for brains. God Almighty. And there's so much more. I regret the fact, and I apologize for the fact, that I have let so much information, so many pieces of news that desperately needed our attention, go by because of this sickening attempt at a pissant revolution by a bunch of people with IQs that aren't the equal of the outside air temperature where I am right now. There's stuff about Flint out there that will come damn near making you weep if it doesn't actively make you weep. The emails are coming out now from Rick Snyder's governor's office in Michigan and various and sundry state agencies. A lot of them have been redacted over at Raw Story. Tom Bagioni noting that one of the emails that was released was entirely blacked out by the governor's lawyers. It was a two-page email, January 3rd, 2014, and the whole goddamn thing is nothing but a blackout. I mean, this is, you know, this was funny when it was in Catch-22. And the entire letter was censored except for, I long for you achingly, A.T. Tapman Chaplin. That was funny. This isn't. And then there's the email that the New York Times found. Mm-hmm. In that email, Governor Snyder finds out about something that happened on the ground in Flint. And it's a healthcare provider talking to a concerned mother. And if this doesn't just gag your gut, if this doesn't bring tears to your eyes, well, the New York Times writes, of all the concerns raised by the contamination of Flint's water supply and the failure of the state and federal governments to promptly address the crisis after it began nearly 2 years ago, none is more chilling than the possibility that children in this tattered city may have suffered irreversible damage to their developing brains and nervous systems from exposure to lead. Younger children and fetuses. I thought the Republicans cared about fetuses, but apparently not little black ones, not in Flint. Younger children and fetuses are especially vulnerable because of their developing brains and nervous systems, which is why the efforts in Flint will focus on children 5 and younger. And so in one of the emails, Governor Snyder is informed about a citizen in Flint who described being told by a state nurse a year ago, January 2015. The mother had found out that her son, had elevated levels of lead in his blood. And the nurse said to her, sweet Jesus, it's just a few IQ points. It's not the end of the world. I bet I know how that woman votes. It's just a few IQ points. It's not the end of the world. By God, it's the end of that child's world. Or his ability to comprehend and participate in it. It reminds me of the story out of Hindu mythology about the race between Krishna and Ganesh. They were standing there with their parents, and Krishna, being a bit of a smartass, challenged lumbering Ganesh, who of course is an elephant, to a race around the world. And Ganesh accepts the challenge, and they're both standing there, and go! And there goes Krishna, and he races around the world, and he comes back, and there stands Ganesh. And Ganesh, upon hearing the words go, had walked around his mother and father. And stopped again where he began. And Krishna said, I win! And Ganesh said, no, I win. And Krishna said, how can you win? You didn't leave. He said, you challenged me to a race around the world. You ran around the world. I walked around my world. It's just a few IQ points. It's not the end of the world. more and more we're finding out that in Flint, what we had was a carnival of monsters. This too. Long before Flint residents were given any access to clean water, a year before bottled water was passed out to residents of Flint, state workers in the state building in Flint, Michigan, began getting clean drinking water. And so, when the concerns about the quality of the water began to get out and get around, Rick Snyder's administration made the decision that water coolers with bottled water would be brought into the state building so that state workers there wouldn't have to drink from the water fountains that were connected to the toxic Flint water supply. And water coolers were installed next to the water fountains on every occupied floor of the state building in Flint, with the understanding that those coolers would remain there, quote, as long as the public water does not meet treatment requirements. And of course, no advisory was even issued for the everyday hoi polloi of the city of Flint until September, this past September. Tell me again why Rick Snyder isn't cooling his heels in some facility and trying to make bail. Can you arrest a sitting governor? I think you can. Oh, and all those dumbasses out in Oregon, worried about the fall of our constitutional republic. Not a word out of them about Flint. No, I just want to run my cattle wherever the hell I want to. God damn it, I deserve to run my cattle for free on federal land. What the hell else is having a government for? Who cares? I mean, hell, it's just a few IQ points. It's not like it's the end of the world. Jennifer with a note said, oh my God, I just tuned in and this, not to make it about myself, but when I was poisoned and had my thyroid destroyed, my cognitive abilities were diminished, my spatial awareness severely altered. I feel so fucking raped, the company that knew I was being poisoned. That nurse, that state nurse in Michigan is a monster. I can only imagine the stab to her gut the mother took. Sorry, oh my God, I'm shaking with rage. I'm shaking with you. I'm shaking with you, Jennifer. And probably everyone within the sound of my voice is shaking too. The pity is that we don't know the name of that state nurse. It's just a few IQ points. It's not the end of the world. Do I have to go to the extra step of saying that that mother was probably African American? Nah, I didn't think I would. And then this, courtesy of Carol. If you want to get fresh water in Flint, if you want bottled water in Flint, because they're finally distributing bottled water in Flint, you have to show... You ready for this? You have to show ID. If you're an undocumented immigrant in Flint, you don't get no water. Because Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God, indivisible, amen, in God we trust, hallelujah.
No, that's real. That is real.
You cannot get access to drinking water without a photo ID. Thanks, Rick Snyder. Thanks.
Some state-run water dispensaries are requiring residents to show an ID before they can receive clean drinking water. Vox has reported that. An undocumented immigrant said, I went to ask for water from the fire station, and they asked for my social security number, so I left. I feel bad that I can't get the help. I don't want to expose my kids to lead. And the National Guard is going door-to-door delivering water, but, an individual by the name of Casey Tolan said, when National Guard officers go door-to-door to deliver water to elderly and disabled people, undocumented immigrants are unlikely to open their doors. Rumors are flying about the Obama administration's undocumented immigration raids nationwide, and on social media, immigrants encourage one another to keep the door shut. The irony being, of course, that the woman who came from Mexico to Flint probably had cleaner water there than she does here. Yeah, as Carol notes, maybe contaminated water won't make those Mexicans so rapey. And yeah, there's that too, as Jennifer points out. And this is real. The people there are still being billed for not paying for the poisonous water. They can be fined for not paying their water bill. Jennifer says, I can't breathe. Is this it? Is this the moment in time when the collective consciousness unites? We the people? We? No. Oh, and by the way, courtesy of the Free Thought Project, not only is the Michigan government poisoning its residents, but now they're threatening to take their children away for not paying for it. Yes, real, true. As the water crisis in Flint deepens, it is becoming apparent that the effects of the lead-infested water are not just a health hazard, but the situation has the potential of ruining many more lives outside of the poison issue. There is no denying that the water in Flint is undrinkable and that it is contaminated with lead and other substances, and it is clear that the government of Flint is responsible for the problem. However, the city's government continues to charge the people for the poisonous water and then threatens to foreclose on their home or take their children if they refuse to pay. Michigan law says that parents are neglectful as a matter of law if they don't have running water in their home. And if they choose not to pay for water they can't drink anyway, then they could be guilty of child endangerment. Flint resident Melissa Mays says that some residents have already received similar threats from the government if they refuse to pay their bills. Man, it is a Republican wonderland in Michigan. And just think, if the children were taken, maybe they can be put into foster care with somebody just like Lavoie Finkham. You know what? I just realized that I've filibobstered for 24 minutes longer than I was supposed to. So we'll take a break, and I want to thank Roger for getting us started. Let's see. Oh God, I got a cipher.
That was $316.26 to go. $316.26 to go. Thank you very kindly for getting us started, Roger. I really appreciate it. We all do. Note coming in from Philip. Subject line, New Hampshire, Finkham, and Clinton. Bob, I urgently need to know whether your server is properly encrypted. Given the latest on Hillary Clinton's failure to properly safeguard the confidentiality of some messages on her server, I am deeply concerned that my Horn correspondence may be my undoing when I announce my own bid for president, and am hoping that you can assure me that they are adequately protected on your patchwork computer. Oh, yeah, I mean, nobody gets in here without at least a hairpin to get through the door. Assuming they are, I promise I will not announce my candidacy until I receive assurance from you that the Horn will be solvent throughout my campaign and first term. In other words, Philip will not be announcing a run for president. By the way, Philip says, I received the message below from the Louisiana Lizard King, James Carville. Strange allegations from a dude who's married to a Republican hack extraordinaire. But first, New Hampshire. When I lived in my beloved former People's Republic of Massachusetts, I always wondered why William Loeb and other right-wing Granite Staters didn't live by the state motto of which they're so proud, and given their inability to live in the total irresponsible demagogic liberty they desire, die. You know, that's the motto of New Hampshire. Live free. Live free or die. After all, the motto is live free or die, not fight to live free or die, and I want to regard them as honorable people who live by their words. As for Mr. Finkham, I can't celebrate anyone's death, but I dare say that I regard an adult driving a truck as a weapon and being armed as much more of a threat to law enforcement than a 12-year-old playing with a toy gun in a park. That's all, says Philip, because I'm strapping on my freedom protector, my mind, and aiming it for a night of education on the Horn. Thanks for all you do. Be well, Philip. Thank you. And by the way, the note coming from James Carville was appended. Wall Street fat cats and Bernie Sanders may not agree on much, but this week they're chummier than a pair of pals slurping. Wait a minute, I'm doing wrong accent. Wall Street fat cats and Bernie Sanders may not agree on much, but this week they're chummier than a pair of pals slurping hurricanes on Bourbon Street while they work to bring down their common enemy, Hillary Clinton. Iowans are caucusing in 3 days, and the Sanders camp and the hedge fund money men are flooding the airwaves with ads. Philip, you gonna let that fly? I don't think so. And that, of course, is a linky. We know why Bernie wants to beat Hillary. What's a little trickier is why the hedge fund money men want to beat Hillary. They think Bernie can't win a general election, and they want to make life easy for their Republican buddies. If you want Hillary to win Iowa and win the White House, you got to step up and help her fight back. Sanders' people and the GOP are shelling out millions to attack our gal. And where I come from, we don't let those kind of antics go unchecked. No, we call them out onto the veranda and we gun them down at 20 paces. No, that part's not in there. So pull out your wallet, chip in a dollar, and make sure Iowaians know the truth about Hillary. And let's go win this tang. Oh, I know what I'm going to be doing during the break. Wait. Yep, there it is. All right. Got my bucket. Marty notes, good thing for that nurse in Michigan, I'm not that child's father. Philip had an addendum to his note. He said, I might add rather callously that had Lavoy Finkham understood even a smattering of the language from which his nickname is derived, Blue Tarp? No. He might have known no good would come from grandstanding in the Mahler Refuge. Had he called me, I would have told him that, as much as I ain't superstitious, I would not expect that an illegal seizure of a refuge called Misfortune would bode well for anyone. Even now, Death in Misfortune sounds like the title of a bad Zane Grey story to me. Jesus, it's either that. You know what? It could be Zane Grey, or it could be, by God, put a color in there, too. Gray Death in Misfortune, and you got a Travis McGee novel. I'll be dipped. It's always such a joy hearing from Philip. So we got all that. We've got our fundraising started. What did I say? 316.26. $316.26 to go, and I am finally going to take the break And we'll fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and hope like hell it works. And apart from that, well, this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Coltrane's run through our veins, moving monuments to better days. That mountain stands over our darkened lungs. It's time to ponder what we've become. In his company town, it's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Well-dressed Yankee bosses worked us so hard for their well-dressed children and their well-kept yards, while coal camps echoed with the mournful sounds of impoverished voices from deep in the ground. Under this company town is what we know. Change comes. Change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Our parents' memories of World War II, minds were drowned, the clock was the American thing to do. Families gathered round their radios to hear FDR say we'd make it somehow in our town. Jobless faces and their grim plight, while four men and a drag line blow the mountaintop off to take its heart out. Now it knows what we've lost in this company town. It's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Until the life's all drained out of a company town.
From the first Moving Mountains CD, that is a brilliant independent artist by the name of Andrew McKnight. And I get chills every time I play that song. It's called Company Town. And I personally think it should be the state anthem of West Virginia. Let's see here. You want to know who's pissed off right now? Agnes is pissed off. Agnes, you see, is a nurse. She was being a nurse professionally when we met, but then she took it up a notch and decided to apply her skills to our attempt to raise a little family. And I will not compare my lovely wife to an old wet hen, but I will say that she is righteously furious at the...
Well, it's just a few IQ points. It's not like it's the end of the world. God almighty.
You know what? Speaking of motto, well, you know, I said the Andrew McKnight song should be the state anthem of West Virginia. That should be the national motto of the Republican Party. It's just a few IQ points. It's not like it's the end of the world. Because you know what else makes, you know what else affects one's ability to think properly? Mercury. Remember the Mad Hatter? Yeah. Mercury. Because, well, that may, you know, people ask, you know, how have we gotten so stupid that we're willing, you know, I mean, we were asking that question about Bush. You know, how did we let him in? And we're, you know, how could people possibly want Donald Trump to be president and you, all of these things? How can we keep, how is it that we keep electing these goddamn teabagging, you know, people? Why? And then the ultimate question, why do people vote against their own best interests? Well, what did we make electricity out of? What do you have to do with what we made electricity out of in order to make the electricity? What happens when you burn what it is that you have to burn in order to make the electricity? What gets into the air? Mercury. You don't know it, but if you live in an area anywhere near a coal-fired power plant, your body is probably swimming in mercury. Hair sampling is good for that. Let's run over and cross our fingers and hope that the Horn Malloy Skype chat line works. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
Okay, I see you coming through. I see you coming through on the metering, so I'm going to have to check in with the chat room. And, well, I'll let you talk for a little bit. How's it going?
Oh, it's going okay. I'm just sitting here watching it rain. I've had an interesting week. Well, last Saturday, anyway, I lost my router in the middle of the night when the power went out. But earlier that day, cell phone rings with a text message, and it's a tornado warning.
To what?
A tornado warning.
Okay,
for our area,
where you live, not a. Yeah, it's not. It's not like it can. Oh, look, there's a tornado warning in Mississippi. No. No, a tornado warning for, like, Sparky's house in Northern California.
Yeah, we've been having them lately out here in the last, 10 years or so, maybe. And they mostly start getting, they're small ones. I mean, they haven't done a lot of damage. But they mostly happen in the spring now. But it's... It just shocked the hell out of me.
Yeah, but you've got a classic Mediterranean climate. You're not supposed to have tornadoes.
No. But hell, Bob, it snowed in Kuwait today.
Stop it.
I'm not kidding you. You can look it up online. There's pictures and everything.
I'll be damned. They must have gone absolutely halfway out of their mind. When's the last time that happened?
Never. Nobody has no records of it.
Ever. Not ever. Even. I mean, there's not even a hadith in the Quran that said, "And yea, verily, lo, then did the snows fall upon Muhammad." No.
That's what it said. I'm just going by what this article said.
Wow. Well, apparently, I'm being told in the chat room that yes, the audio is getting through. So that's one less thing to worry about.
Well, good. And it's also Cattleman Invasion weekend here.
It's a what?
Cattleman Invasion weekend at the fairgrounds.
Oh, such fun. Lovely.
The bull sale. So there's more cowboys and big trailers and big you know, dually trucks pulling around, driving around. You ever see, want to see.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, the Angry Indian just told me that it snowed in Saudi Arabia, too. His majestic, noble, serene, gracious highnessness, the king, held a bowl of snow up on the television. He says there's images all over the Internet. Behold, snow. And you know, how lovely that the one man who is single-handedly responsible for so much climate change is sitting there going, what the fuck is this? Do you notice how all of a sudden the king of Saudi Arabia has a redneck accent? I can't help it.
Well, you know, that's what happens when he, visits West Virginia, right, Bob?
Well, I don't care if he does visit West Virginia. I ain't kissing him on the mouth, either.
Exactly. I got a question.
And I ain't walking through the ramps with him hand in hand, neither.
I don't blame you. I got a question for Sparky.
What's that?
Are any of the relatives of Mr. I Think I Forgot Where My Gun Is going to be at the fair, since they're cattlemen there?
I don't know. You see license plates from all over the West.
Yeah.
The West, I mean, they come from Wyoming, Montana.
Yeah.
It's been happening. I mean, it's the first weekend of February. Every year it's been going on for forever.
I don't know if you got my question. That was a joke.
No.
Okay, Mr. Finkham, I said, I think I forgot where my gun was. His relatives.
Yeah. But the FBI knew he had a gun. There's pictures of him. He had a shoulder holster. He carried that 9mm around him.
Yeah. I looked at the tape. I didn't like listen to any of the FBI press conference or read the transcript of it. But just looking at the tape, it looked like he was like playing games and goofing around. Like he had his arms like straight out instead of directly above his head, like you do when you're surrendering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like kind of reaching down towards his abdomen and, you know, moving his arms up towards his shoulders and stuff. And, well, I guess the gun was in his holster, wasn't it, or was in his pocket? I mean, I couldn't.
Well, it could have. He had a heavier jacket on. I would imagine, because it was cold that day and snowy, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, the snow there. They got somebody put up a wooden cross at the site.
Okay. Well,
I posted that earlier in the Skype chat here.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, it's sad that the guy died, but, I mean, he did bring about his own end, you know, through his actions, you know?
Yeah, but he's going to be martyred, and there's a call to action that I posted.
Well, but Sparky, they'd have martyred him if he got a hangnail or an ingrown toenail. You know, it's the government's fault.
Jeez, that's right. Well, I mean... You know,
the Patriots Network put out a call to action. It's got today's date on it.
Okay. Well, the guy was clearly had a death wish, and there was no way that he was going to get out of that. There was no way he was going to surrender peacefully. You know, he had to get shot. I mean, you know, that's just the way it was. And I guess everybody else was in the vehicle, I guess, by the Patriots standard, were cowards, because they should have gone down in flames, too. I mean, they should have, like, you know, had to, like, fire at the, you know, they should have, you know, popped their Freedom Protectors out of that van or whatever, the SUV, and started shooting at the FBI agents. I mean, you know, by their standards. So they were cowards to surrender.
Well, I just thought it was funny at that news conference yesterday that FBI... that somebody asked him, he took questions. And one person asked him, well, how did you know they were going to John Day? And he went, they put it on their Facebook page.
Well, they did. I mean, because they'd issued it. I mean, it was a public meeting that they'd set up to try to generate sympathy for themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's in one article I read today, the two senators from Oregon, the one of the local TV networks, put to stop the spread of the virus. that was titled an article that had to end the standoff. Because the two senators were visiting the head of the, what's it, Comey? They were in Comey's office the day of the raid.
Okay, there's one of those awkward silences. Rick, I was gonna. You sent me an email and sort of analyzing federal sentencing guidelines and stuff. I'd appreciate it if you would go over that because, you know, the at most 6 years part of that penalty sort of pissed me off a little bit.
Yeah.
But you read it a little differently, don't you?
Yeah. I think what the feds did is they, you know, until they can figure out who did what by gathering all the evidence in the case, they're just roping everybody in with a conspiracy charge, and they're going to basically, you know, it'll form a basis to arrest them and detain them. And then what they have to do is they have a certain amount of time after they file the criminal complaint to either present an indictment to the grand jury and get these people indicted, or they get a preliminary hearing. And very few U.S. attorney's offices in the country do preliminary hearings. I remember that only, I think the District of Massachusetts would do preliminary hearings. But, you know, from a prosecutor's standpoint, for those of you who aren't that familiar with it, you don't want to have to do a preliminary hearing because you're basically required to turn over a bunch of discovery to the defense. And they get basically a free shot to try their case in sort of a mini trial to determine whether there's a probable cause for the judge to bind the defendant over for trial, or I guess reasonable cause to bind him over for trial. And, you know, that's what they don't want to do. So what they're probably going to be doing is I'm sure they started a grand jury. They probably have had a grand jury in place since shortly after the takeover on January 2nd. And I noticed that the most recent dates really referred to in the criminal complaint, I think we're like on January 11th. And then, I mean, the most recent date was January 26th when it referred to the arrests of the people, okay, of the defendants. But the date, the only event prior to that was like the most recent one prior to that was January 11th. So what these cats are doing, you know, what the government's doing is they're, you know, they probably were they were investigating them from the beginning. And this is just to kind of like hold these people, get them out, you know, of the refuge, detain them. And then they're going to bring much more serious charges, I'm guessing. You know, 6 years is the maximum sentence for violating the statute that they've been charged with conspiring to violate. But the problem is these guys, these cats were using guns. And that, you know, that triggers mandatory minimum sentences for use or possession of a gun in connection with committing a crime of violence, which clearly these were, you know, even if it's... you know, I think it has to be a little more than just a simple assault, but, you know, but what federal law does is it imposes mandatory minimums of either 5, 7, or 10 years under Section 924C of the U.S. Criminal Code, that's Title 18, if you use a deadly or dangerous weapon or device in relation to, quote, any crime of violence. And then if they merely possess the weapon, it's 5 years. If they brandish it, which means point it at somebody, it's 7 years. And if they discharge it, it's 10 years. And the penalties under that statute are in addition to any other penalties that they otherwise...
So does that mean consecutive sentencing?
Yes. The mandatory minimum must be imposed consecutively with any other sentence imposed in connection with violations of other laws regarding, you know, that crime of violence. If they possessed a machine gun or a destructive device, or if the weapon is equipped with a silencer or a muffler, there's a mandatory minimum sentence of 30 years.
No real evidence of them having those, though, is there?
I'm not aware of anything, no.
Well, they haven't searched anything yet.
Well, I mean, I keep watching the coverage, And the thing that sort of astonishes me, Rick, is that there's not a lot of people talking about the fact that he was basically in the middle of the act of attempted vehicular homicide.
Yes, you know, I noticed that part of the film, and it kind of jumped, so it was difficult to see from the film, you know, that there was a guy in the snowbank that had to, like, either got hit or he had to avoid
it. It looked like he got hit, because he's knocked down and then he's rolling away.
Okay, yeah, because the film is pretty bad. I couldn't really tell from that. So with these mandatory minimum sentences... What's that?
Could have been jumping out of the way.
Yeah, you might have been. I mean, who knows? But, I mean, you know, Bob, my guess is these cats are going to be... These cats, you know, the main antagonists are going to get at least 200 months in prison, is my guess. And
Okay, let me ask you this, since, I mean, you have some real expertise on it. What impact is there for... things like early release, parole, that kind of thing?
Well, in the federal system, you do get credit for good time served, but it's only 15% of the good time served. So, for example, if you're given a sentence of a year and a day, you have to be sentenced to at least a year. You have to be sentenced to more than a year in order to get credit for good time served. So if a judge... Yep.
Okay. And I've already got
to
stand by, guys.
Okay. And, well, we'll get that back in a minute.
Yeah, there was also a hearing today. I don't know if you got that.
I saw. And were they deemed to be a flight risk?
Yeah, they're going to hold them. Oh, the judge said, "Boy, I got." I forget this guy's name.
Yeah, that's Charlie.
Yeah. Charlie?
Hey, yeah. Can you mute for a minute, please? There's a lot of mic noise coming from you, buddy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the judge said today that nobody was going to be released until the last occupants of the bird sanctuary are gone.
And they're still there, right?
Yeah, they were since the last time I checked.
Well, once I read that the one guy had priors out on him for cannabis offenses, I finally figured out where those last remaining patriots got their bags of doobie from.
Yeah, but I think they had that other charge pending against him anyway. He was going to be charged like the rest of them. But his wife was been free to go, and the doofy computer kid, whatever his name is, I forgot his name.
Ron just noted that perhaps Lavoie had terminal hemorrhoids, and suicide by cop was the easiest way to deal with it. Well, personally, I think he was a human hemorrhoid, wasn't he? I know we're not supposed to speak ill of the dead, but who came up with that anyway? Oh, Ron's in the room now, so, yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm listening.
Good evening, brother of the temperate north.
Well, we all agree the guy was an asshole, so hemorrhoids was a logical jump.
Yes, it absolutely is. What needs to be understood is this hasn't changed their position vis-a-vis their bizarre view of the Constitution.
I think it may well deter some of the future hangers-on, like the four idiots that are stuck there at the moment, because they were the last ones to get the word.
Well, they were camped out guarding a road or something.
So okay. are those guys still loose at the camp or what? Have they been arrested yet, or are they still hanging out?
They're still there hanging out.
Okay.
Having their little campfires.
Okay.
Screwing around with the excavator.
Huh. Okay, well.
Building their little fortress they got there.
Singing Kumbaya.
Kind of reminds me of my kid when he was like 4 or 5 years old, what, trying to build forts, you know? That's sort of their mental
But the age. One thing on the Twitter feed on Oregon Standoff that I know is some people come up with once in a while, where the hell is Blaine Cooper? One of the original guys and pretty much a lead guy. He's like their educator. He'd do little chalkboard talks on the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Where the hell did he get off to? Nobody's seen him.
That's true. That's true. But there's a warrant out for him, right? Or did they just is he one of the just got to walk away types?
Well, no, they probably don't know when he left. He probably left the same time Ritzheimer did to go to Arizona.
Well, there was mention that he had absented himself. You know what? Maybe he was the rat.
Could have been.
There was a rat?
That's what all the talk on the internet is starting to be.
What did they rat on? Like the travel route of these people or what?
Well, the comings and goings and the doings and the plannings and yeah.
Okay. So he was like a mole, I guess, of sorts. Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. I mean, these guys are, you know, I can explain just a little bit here why these guys are going to face, you know, Mammon is going to probably get, you know, 300 or 400 months in jail. I'll tell you why in just a little bit. I got to do one quick thing, okay?
Sounds good. And since I did filibobster for such a long time, I'm going to go ahead and mention here, since we're coming up on the end of the second hour, just a reminder that thanks to our buddy Scott in Sweden, there's a challenge on the table, an extra 50, and the next month 60. It's the Beat the Swede for 12 months challenge, and it only happens if we finish January in the okay. And we've got, based on the cipher, and I did, what was that, $316.76 to go? Was that it? Something like that. But anyway, we've got that, and hopefully we can knock that down and get all the way to the February 1st and get started on the Beat the Swede challenge. So that's out there. You know, the standard stuff applies. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. But I didn't give out the mailing address, and that is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Checks and money orders only, made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne does when he puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber. So we've gotten that out of the way. I do look forward to Rick coming back and telling us about what hopefully will be the very, 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 very long time that ammonium nitrate Bundy spends in the clink. But I wanted to share a couple of things also along the way, and I want to go over to the stress line as well because it looks like we may have Kevin on the line. By the way, I love it when you guys enjoy the music. Carol really dug Company Town. So does our good friend Cindy out in the Great Northwest. Wow, Bob, I love this song a lot. Thanks for the enlightenment again. By the way, I just arrived home today and missed some of the show. Boo. Wondering whether you saw the PBS American Experience on the Cold Wars this week. Yeah, I did. I did. And in fact, I spent a lot of the first hour talking about it, so you'll hear that when you go back around. In regard to tornadoes, Ray in Florida says, you know, we're getting tornadoes that aren't supposed to happen, too, and a very wet, dry season. Hello, climate change. Yeah. Down under in Australia, Robert says, you can't drink the water, and the government will take your kids away because you won't let your kids drink the tap water because it's poison, and it's poison because the government poisoned it, and because it's poison, you won't pay for it, but not letting your kids drink poisoned water makes you a neglectful parent, and because you're a neglectful parent, the government can take your kids away. Huh? What? Why haven't the people of Flint burnt down the town hall yet? I would. Well, it's... it's a fair. I mean, they're doing what they can, but again, the real spirit of militancy is gone from this country. And I'm not, when I say that, I mean, on all sides. Look, militant radicalism. They took over a bird sanctuary, and they're right wingers. Okay. And they're pissed off about something that isn't even real. On our side and on the side of working people and struggling people and poor people, they figured out, they've solved us for all intents and purposes. The early radicalism there that was featured in that PBS segment on the Mine Wars, you know, that's before the passage of the National Labor Relations Act, which was subsequently neutered by the Taft-Hartley Act. So we can't be having any more general strikes now, because that's just not cricket. And we can't, marches on Washington, you know, these are all events. They're not the intimately associated, they're not intimately associated with actual life and death struggles. Or they're not perceived as such. And if the media don't declare it to be such, well, then it doesn't really exist. I mean, this is all trees falling in a forest now. And it's really frustrating. And it's one of the challenges of our time to figure out how to make it real. The closest thing to it having been Occupy and Zuccotti Park. And we know what they got for their trouble. And so reinventing that is actually something that should occupy our time. And I can't answer your question, Robert. Honest to God, I can't. And apparently we still have problems with the stress line. Kevin said he did try calling in, but it didn't work out. I'm terribly sorry, Kevin. I'm trying to get this sorted out. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Philip again. Subject line, Saudi Arabia and snow, what the angry Indian missed. Sorry, Bob, but the angry Indian missed the most important part of the story about snow in Saudi Arabia. My understanding is that the Saudi government has vowed to behead every snowman and snowwoman until the onslaught of Western infidel-caused climate change is halted by the most compassionate, the merciful sky god, in response to the Saudis' declaration of an emergency Hajj and a few more devout circuits around the Kaaba. Lastly, if Flint is any indication of how the federal and state governments will respond to the increasing ravages of climate change and deterioration of the infrastructure, we can all tuck our heads between our legs and kiss it goodbye now. As a person with respiratory illness, I've already had to pay for physician-ordered oxygen for nearly a year until I couldn't afford it anymore, so I'm waiting anxiously for my or any other Republican governor to announce user fees for state residents for breathing air over state land. I'm a bit slow on the uptake because I'm still trying to figure out why government-owned utilities needed to be privatized and run for profit. I guess I'm too inefficient to enjoy all the benefits of our free market system. Well, ain't that about the truth? And look, I mean, I didn't watch the thing last night, but I can tell you this, without having seen it, you take one look at what went down last night at the Republican pageant. You want more Flint? Vote for one of those fuckwits. Any of those fuckwits. You want more Flints? Go ahead. And frankly, I don't even... I look back 2 years to what happened in Charleston, and there's no real change. I don't know if Gerald's still out there listening, but you know how much change has there been? Precious little, as far as I can tell. Let me see here. Couple of different. All right. Jennifer says, "Can Philip have a toaster for bringing laughter to this morning? It's this morning there in Australia." Laughter, yes. I think we can. We can spare a toaster this evening. Absolutely. Let me run over and see what's going on with the if we can get a human being in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Is that you, Todd?
Hey, how's it going, Bob? Can you hear me okay?
I hear you. The question is, can you hear me?
Yeah, Well, it sounds like Skype on a bad morning after Mexican endeavor. Anyway, yeah, it's a little scrambled.
Well, you come through just dandy.
Okay.
The only problem is you can't. The only problem being that you can't hear the Skype group.
We can hear him.
Yeah, they can hear you. You can't hear him. They can hear you. You can't hear them.
Oh, okay. Okay. So anyway, what you were saying earlier today, I've always been very moved by what's been going on in West Virginia in terms of how they would hire private people to enforcement of making people go to work, basically. I mean, they got control of your whole life, and then if you don't want to go to work, there's no use for you. And, you know, just like Ford did with the Pinkertons at the River Rouge plant. So, it's like Carol said, it's very prescient in that before we know it, we're going to be back in that fascist era again if we're not there already. You know, and with this Flint situation, I mean, that's just straight up genocide. I don't even understand why Snyder is not in prison right now. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. And I'm going to keep this short, obviously. But it seems like it's very similar between what they're doing to Flint and what they're doing to the Appalachian folks. Because if they don't want you to work in the coal mine, they don't really want you there. They could care less because they just would rather just blow the mountain up and you not be there. Apparently, that's the way they act. And I hope you get your technology worked out. And just keep on keeping on. And that's it. I'm listening.
All right, Todd. You want me to leave you here on the Skype line? Oh, no, the answer to that is no.
Sure, he's got a good connection on a computer or radio.
Right, right. Okay, so let me get back over here and okay, someone attempting to call in from area code 413. You can't do that because we can't use line one with the Skype group. You'll have to come in via Skype. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, and you can be part of the merriment. Are you there, Sparky?
Yeah.
Okay. I wish they would stop changing the interface. On this whole thing, it gets a little frustrating, but no, I just wanted to sort of go around the horn with the folks who are in the room. Charlie called in and I asked him to mute because of mic noise, but jump in with what's on your mind, Charlie.
Yeah, Bob. Has anybody ever covered the subject of what would happen to the people out in Oregon if they were black instead of white?
I've touched on that a few times. I don't think the occupation of the bird sanctuary would have gotten past day one. Do you?
Oh no. And if you'll notice, the people in Flint, there's a lot of people of African-American heritage in Flint.
Sure.
And they really don't care about them. You know? And I can just sit back and watch the way things are unfolding in this country right now, and it's not going to be a pretty picture in a few years.
No, I go back and forth wondering, Charlie, whether or not I'm being... whether I'm overreacting, but it's getting frightening, and in a place like West Virginia, downright terrifying.
Yeah,
because we're facing real live, honest to God, failed state collapse here. We're already running humongous deficits and deficits on a state level, deficits on a national level. When you get to print your own money. that's not so, maybe that's not so worrisome, but on a state level, it is. And the coal industry here has collapsed. Alpha Natural Resources just announced 800 or more permanent layoffs. And oddly enough, it was of underground miners. All the layoffs were for underground miners. Nobody who was doing mountaintop removal got laid off. They're still going to do that. But that means that there's that many fewer people making any kind of anything resembling a decent wage. That also means that the taxes that the coal industry, the pitiful pittance of taxes that they paid into the treasury, is going away. And so, you know, things like schools, the government itself, there's been a 10% across the board cut to every department in the state. And, you know, that includes people who are supposed to, you know, monitor things like sludge dams that when they collapse are going to unleash 9 billion gallons of toxic waste. Monitoring chemical storage tanks like the one that poisoned 300,000 people a couple of years ago. It is, Charlie. It's scary.
And, you know, I don't think we're going to have to worry that much about climate change as long as they keep pumping the amount of poison gas into the air that they're pumping into it. I mean, if we were to quit burning fossil-based fuels, the atmosphere would clean up a lot and probably wouldn't see near as many like cases of cancer and stuff like that.
You know, every time I hear about a case of cancer, especially particular sorts of cancer, during the President's State of the Union address, Charlie, when he said, "I want an Apollo program for the cure to cancer," my first thought was, "Well, I'm no scientist, but I can tell you how to cut down on a lot of cancer."
Oh yeah,
cut down on the environmental toxins. I mean, okay, we know about smoking and cancer, tobacco use and cancer, absolutely. I guess there's some sort of linkage between booze and cancer. Yes, absolutely. But what do you say? But what about the stuff that we put out there that we all have to deal with, like particulate matters from matter from coal-fired power plants, or the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that come off of frack pads that we know for a fact are coming off there. Or good God, look at what's happening! You know, look at what's happening with the busted gas storage well in Southern California. There is a way to not have as much cancer as we do.
Well, the one thing I guess I kind of disagree with you about is you can see particulate matter. It's just the poison gases that we emit that you can't see, and people don't realize that it's making them sick.
Oh, no, you can't see the particulate matter. What we're talking about is a standard called PM2.5, and that's 2.5 microns. And then there are the things called the ultrafines, and you've got to have an electron microscope to see those son of a guns. And when you get down to the ultrafine level, Charlie, there is no substance on Earth that is benign at an ultrafine level. They will all kill your ass. And there's tons of them, for instance, coming off of mountaintop removal sites from the blasting or anywhere they do blasting. I know Roger in Minnesota is deeply concerned about it. Particulate matter coming off of blasting in the sand hills where they're mining for frack sand in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa. Every time a blast goes off, ultrafine particulates go into the air and get breathed by somebody, and there's nothing you can do about it. Oh, I hate it when that happens. But, well, hopefully Charlie will call back. But let's continue onward and check. Ron, what's anything else on your mind this evening?
Yeah, I wanted to chat briefly about something you mentioned earlier about Obama's program to find cures for cancer. And I would think it's primarily a political thing because, to my mind, finding a cure for cancer is a totally different objective than preventing cancer. If you're trying to find a cure for cancer, you're almost automatically generating some kind of a market where you can pour in huge amounts of money to corporations and for-profit universities, etc., for research. If you're trying to prevent cancer, you're actually asking people and voters to stop doing something. And it's a huge difference in the approach you'd have to take.
Well, there's always, yeah, there's absolutely, there's nothing can happen in this country that is not touched by the profit motive, right?
Yep.
And if you can't make money at it, it ain't worth doing. I mean, isn't that what Martin Shkreli taught us? Remember Pharma Bro Dude?
Yep.
Bought the rights to a critically important drug and jacked it up, what, 5,000, 10,000%?
Yeah, he made himself some very useful enemies doing that. He was a little asshole.
But, you know what? About him, he didn't get busted for doing that. He got busted for securities law violations because he was running a Ponzi scheme with his companies.
Yeah, so Capone got busted for taxes.
Yeah. No, point, Ponzi scheme. Securities fraud.
They got him.
Shkreli. Yeah, he's in jail, I think, now. Either that or he made bail. He probably made bail. But yeah, he's been charged. He's been indicted for securities fraud violations. So what he was doing is he used the profits from his previous company to, or assets from the previous company to fund his new venture, this pharmacy company. And so that's what got him. But yeah, maybe, I think when you're an asshole, things can kind of tend to backfire on you anyway. So
I like the idea.
Call it the Blankenship factor.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I like the idea of the little twerp being used as a sex toy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I wonder how many dildos people sent to that compound, you know, to the bird sanctuary. I bet they must have gotten hundreds. You know, and I think once he complained about it, was it Ammon who made a statement about that?
No, that was John Krakenheimer.
Oh, Krakenheimer. Once he made that statement, I bet the number of people who sent the dildos probably magnified by 100-fold. You know?
Was there any truth
to
the rumor?
Had to turn away a FedEx driver yesterday with a delivery.
Really?
They had the roadblocks up now.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
Turned to sender.
Was there any truth to the story that somebody sent a 55-gallon drum of lube oil?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a large hollow one filled.
The guy had the invoice and everything online.
Somebody supposedly sent him a large one that was filled with cream cheese.
Oh God. Or lard.
Sure do got a pretty mouth. Squeal, squeal like a pig. Wheel. I guess yes, that lends a new meaning to the term lard ass.
Yeah. That's straight out to Deliverance with Ned Beatty, you know?
Ned Beatty had the hardest part. Now, okay, that's the end of my singing for tonight.
That's okay. So I think I got an answer for you, Bob.
Yes?
About how much time these guys are realistically looking at. Believe me, there's going to be additional charges. I mean, you know, just because these people are white doesn't mean, you know, they will get the full treatment, you know, because if the U.S. government doesn't set an example, you know, if nothing else, overcharging these people, then it's going to encourage more people to act like this way, like this. You know, they really have no choice but to throw the hammer down. I mean, they're going to throw in the fire enhancement charges in there. So that's going to guarantee them at least 60 months plus whatever they get under the, you know, under the interfering with the officials' duties. But, you know, the most closely analogous case I found involving convictions for violating Section 372 of the Criminal Code, there were a couple cases. The one that I find most applicable is called U.S. versus Gerhard. And that was in out of the First Circuit in 2010, actually. And in that case, three defendants were convicted of violating Title 18, Sections 3, 371, and 111A after they actively supported two convicted tax criminals during a well-publicized nine-month armed standoff with federal authorities in New Hampshire. The taxpayers were named the Browns, and these defendants were convicted on all counts. Two of them were convicted on all counts, including the firearms count, in connection with using a violent crime under Section 924C. And so they were sentenced to 432 and 240 months imprisonment respectively. The defendant who was not convicted of the weapons offense got 96 months. And then another case that was kind of interesting is called U.S. versus Rakes out of the Tenth Circuit in 2007. And in that case, a man was convicted of conspiracy to impede the government's RICO investigation and prosecution of a white supremacist group in Utah called Soldiers of Aryan Culture. He was sentenced to 63 months imprisonment because he induced and directed a woman to write and mail a threatening letter to the prosecutor, which violated, Section 876, and it also violated Section 372. And the threatening letter basically stated, it was directed to the prosecutor, and it said, quote, "You stupid bitch, ! It is because of you that my brothers, Aryan brothers, are in jail for the RICO. I know you live on the," and then the street name was redacted, "we will get you till the casket drops," end of quote. And so the prosecutor got that letter and moved away from her house for about a month. She had to have a U.S. Marshal's security detail for quite some time. And she was eventually removed from the RICO case. So that's what I found out anyway. I'm expecting, I'd be very surprised if these guys the ringleaders at least, don't get at least 200 to 300 months in the federal penitentiary. And if they get a sentence like that, they will be in the supermax, I think,
I would prefer that they not get club fed like Maxwell Air Force Base or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think so. No, these guys, I think whenever you're talking with about a firearm crime, a crime committed by use of a firearm, even if you're just possessing it, they're not going to get minimum security or a camp or something like that. They're going to be either medium security at the least. That would be kind of risky. I would put them in maximum security if I was with the BOP,
Yeah. Well, one hopes. And, yeah. Of course, this presupposes I presume that these jackasses are going to insist on going to trial as opposed to enter it, because I'm sure that being God-fearing, upstanding, COLOB-traveling patriots, they're not going to take some pissant plea bargain, are they?
There's no way, Bob. I mean, this is unconstitutional because the federal government's not allowed to own land. Didn't you know that?
The ammonium nitrate Bundy has already said that he's gonna test his theory of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. At his trial. You represent clients, and I don't want to violate any confidentialities, and I don't want you to do anything that the rules of professional conduct would prevent you from doing. But how do you get through when you've got a client who is a real live genuine numbnuts?
Yeah.
How do you get through to them that ain't the short version of, Bub, that ain't gonna work in a trial?
You just keep repeating it, and, I guess, first of all, my firm would never have, a tax protester for a client, because if they ain't paying the federal government, there's no way in hell they're going to be paying their attorney, So we'd be left, holding the bag with a large amount owed to us. But, if we get a client who's having a difficult time acknowledging, let's say, that, the government has a strong case against them, that it's likely they'd be convicted if they go to trial, You know, you just have to just say, look, the government has this, this, and this against you. And, you know, it's difficult to argue that you, you know, that you thought that, you know, you didn't have to report $250,000 of benefits that your company was paying for you, personal expenses, you know, and not have to report those on your tax return. Because you're going to be dealing with jurors who are making probably no more than $30,000 a year. Maybe $50,000 a year.
Yeah, because anybody making any real money has a lawyer who can get them out of jury duty, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, these, you know, these people aren't going to be that sympathetic when they see, you know, expenses for leasing a Lamborghini or a Ferrari and so forth, or you know, making improvements to their home, build a new addition, build a tennis court.
Dear God, what do I do? What do I do with the hangar for the Gulfstream 5, Rick?
I think you went into the wrong racket, Bob. You should have been in Creflo Dollar's racket, you know.
True. And it's all right, and it's all tax free. You got fan mail, Rick.
Oh goodness.
Jennifer in Australia says, "Duck, Rick, I want to give you a big old sloppy wet kiss on your mouth eater for passing on this news. I was getting mental agita from the concern that those white boys were going to get a pass."
Oh, well, that's great. Thank you, Jennifer. No, these people, see, the federal system, you know, the federal system is much different than the state system. The feds are, they have to charge you with the most readily provable offense, okay? They can't just, like, walk on charges, you know, like the state can. And they're not as, you know, they're more insulated from public opinion. The feds are, the federal government. You know, it's a whole different kind of mindset. And they're generally, you know, more competent attorneys than the state prosecutors. Not to say there aren't good state prosecutors, but... You know, to be an assistant U.S. attorney.
No, you got to. I get it. I get it. Yeah, it's there's kind of a pecking order that starts with Supreme Court clerk.
Right. Right.
And then works its way down to junior U.S. assistant attorney. No, that's supposed to be hyper competent, and in fact has to be, because the U.S. attorney him or herself is a political appointee, and quite often can be a complete and total doofus.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, fortunately, in our neck of the woods, the U.S. attorneys, it usually was based on merit, even during the reign of error of Bush. You know, the U.S. attorneys that got appointed were pretty good. You know, a lot of times promoted from within the office, not always, but a lot of times. You know, the same thing even with the nomination for federal judges. I mean, you get a Bush appointee out here in California, I mean, they were basically, there was a committee involving, I think, the two senators, Feinstein and Boxer, and then I think there were also representatives from the Bush administration on the committee. You know, so you had some balance there in terms of recommendations. It wasn't, you know, the dim leader stopped choosing federal judges based on recommendations.
Well, our immediate past U.S. attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia has now seen fit, having lowered the hammer on Don Blankenship and gotten a conviction for a misdemeanor, decided that is sufficient grounds to cause him to enter the West Virginia governor's race on the Democratic side. Here's a fun thought. This coming from Brother Deacon Asa. I wonder how many high-profile teabagger lawyers will come forward and volunteer to defend these clowns in order to get a piece of the limelight.
Well, the problem is, if all these guys have is that constitutional argument, they got nothing. So,
I mean, that's the fun part, isn't it? This, there is absolutely no merit whatsoever to this, to their argument of the Constitution that exists only in their fetid brains, right? I mean, there's no merit in any of this crap. I mean, zero.
No, there isn't.
I mean, you can, I mean, it, you know, the heart and soul of lawyering is to go in, you know, at least trial lawyering is to go in if you're defending and say, well, you know, the law says this, but we think it means this, not what right. the prosecution means. But if you walk in and you say, we think the Constitution means that that guy up there with the robe also needs to be wearing a tri-cornered hat with a single shot muzzle loader pistol under his robe. Even the judge, if he is that way, isn't going to bite.
Yeah, exactly. And it also doesn't work when the defendant complains that, you know, their proper name is not, you know, they're not the defendant charged in the action because their name cannot be all capitalized. That's not, you know, that's not them, you know.
You're kidding. Wait.
No, not kidding you. And another one that they would argue is because there's a gold fringe.
Oh, shit, and the eagle on the top of the flagstaff.
Yeah. It's the war flag, and I don't recognize it.
Consider this, though. Where's the lawyer? There's a lawyer. The lawyers out of Eugene, Oregon's representing Aunt Monia Bundy.
Yeah.
And they have a FundMe site that they set up. They've even talked about it on the courthouse steps. So I don't know how much money's in there now, but there's a legal, it's called a legal defense fund. And
sure.
It's not good. I forget the name of the site right now.
Well, let me ask you, Rick. Did you catch the original statement that the lawyer read about how we're going to, because you weren't present last night, but I actually read the statement and I was like, oh my God, how, you know, this is fun with legal malpractice. This he read his client's statement out loud in front of a microphone that included, for all intents and purposes, admissions of guilt.
I agree. It was crazy. You know, I was like, my mouth was like wide open after I heard that. It's like, whoa, what?
Okay, so I wasn't the only one catching flies around here.
Yeah, continue the fight? Excuse me? Yeah. Well, I would be catching flies, except that I'm in an eight-story office building, and in the time I've worked here, I've only seen maybe one or two flies. Somehow a couple managed to get all the way up here.
No, you're catching the Zika virus.
Oh, God, the Zikas, jeez. Well,
I can't wait till we get good and hysterical about that. That ought to be more fun than Ebola.
That's
mosquitoes. It's just West Nile all over again.
Gad, Zikas.
It's not a hemorrhagic kind of fever, is it, Bob, or not?
No, it's apparently it's kissing cousins with dengue fever.
Oh, okay. Hey, I wonder if climate change could have something to do with that.
Well, maybe if it was real.
Yeah, but we know it's not. It's a liberal plot. It's a plot from George Soros to get all the funding.
And probably close our golf courses, right.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
But it migrates through the mosquito population and will be coming north.
Oh, yeah, and apparently Brazil is covered up with it. Let me mention, you mentioned George Soros there. All the many people who are part of the Horn Family Commune congregation who have to step up and do the work that George Soros for some reason won't. I want to send out thanks to Dwayne for jumping in and becoming a new subscriber. That takes our fundraising down to let me check. Yep. $306.74. So we only got $306.74 to go to clear out January and then qualify for the Beat the Swede January challenge. So $306.74 in whatever combination in the next 25 minutes or so. I mean, we could do that, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
So we got that. Roger has sat patiently by for yea verily long and long. Good evening, Roger.
Good evening. I was just going to say that fever with the carried by the mosquito. According to the webinar stuff I've been reading, it's all blamed on the World Cup in Brazil when all those people from Africa came to Brazil and carried it with them, and then the mosquito bit them, and now it's spreading it there.
Yeah, wait, wait. People from Africa bring their pet mosquitoes with them? What?
No, the people from Africa had it in their bloodstream. Bit by a mosquito in Brazil, and then the mosquito bit somebody else, and now it's traveling around, but it was caused by Brazil hosting the World Cup.
And once again, we find a way to blame Africa.
Yeah, but I got a couple other things I'd like to bring in here. And one of them is that many people might know that on the West Coast, the rock crab and Dungeness crab fisheries have been delayed because of a neurotoxin that everybody thought was being caused by a warmer ocean and an algae bloom, that the toxins created by the algae, and it concentrates into the crab. Well, I read a number today, and I don't know whether it's real conspiracy theory or whether it might have a little bit of truth, and that is that instead of the algae being the real problem, is that the crabs being bottom feeders, the Fukushima nuclear reactor waste that's pouring into the ocean has finally made it across, and that the scavenger bottom feeder collector type things like crabs are now concentrating the nuclear residue that's made it across the Pacific, and that the government is not wanting to tell people that all are bad. So they've blamed it on the algae and only closed off the crab fishing because it's the crab that has the highest amount of radioactivity in it. As I say, I don't know whether this is total conspiracy theory or whether it might have a grain of truth.
Well, it's hard not to take seriously something that that involves Fukushima. And with those critters being on the bottom as opposed to on the top, wouldn't you expect heavy metals and the radiation to sink?
Well, you would expect that. I know we found it in the tuna and a whole lot of other things, but when any species that's accumulating it dies, falls to the ocean floor, and then the crabs feed on the ocean floor, so they would be getting a more concentrated dosage than the fish that are eating the plankton, and then the bigger fish that are eating those fish. And, you know, you go up the food chain, it gets concentrated, and when those fish die, they fall to the ocean floor, and then the crabs eat the remains. So it seems to me plausible. I'm not saying there's any data to it, because nobody, to the best of my knowledge, and I've looked for it, has been publicizing the radioactive levels in the crab.
Roger in Minnesota here, chiming in. Roger, you got it all exactly correct. There's bioaccumulation and bioconcentration. And cadaver feeders, in particular, have a way of concentrating PCBs, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and reductive materials, particularly cesium-137 and strontium-90. I actually have some available data about the bioconcentration of radionuclides from bomb blasts of the late 50s, having to do with crustacean populations. So the data is actually out there. Just dig a little more. You're right on, exactly spot on.
Would that cause a deadly algae bloom, though, or not?
Well, algae.
Algae bloom is a total separate case. They normally call it a red tide in layman's language.
Right.
But right. It's never.
But warming seawater can contribute to that, can it not?
Yes, it can. And we've had the warming seawater. But for the last 2 months, we have had the biggest wave action on the West Coast that we've had in years and years and years. A whole lot of stirring of the ocean, cold waves coming through, and we as I say, we've had the red tide problems before, but never lasting past like November. And here we are in February, and we're still being told we can't have Dungeness crab or rock crab unless it's being caught in Oregon or Washington. But here on the coast, you know, California, we can't eat it. And I wasn't so personally worried about the red tide problem. Yeah, that'll come and go. No problem. But when I came across this thing talking about the radiation leaks from Fukushima and the ice dams they tried to build and how it didn't work and the hundreds of thousands of gallons and the time it takes to come across the ocean and all the rest of it, this what I thought might have been a conspiracy article started to make some sense to me. And I'm not saying it's true, because I don't know, but I just thought it was a very interesting thing to think about.
Well, you know, yeah, it is, I think. I mean, in these strange times, you know, sometimes conspiracy theories make them more sense than anything else, than any other explanation, you know?
Well, a lot of times there are giveaways in the conspiracy articles, because they will be written by people who are not who are marginally okay writers, but will provide tells in the text, you know, to use the poker term. Did you see any of those, Roger?
No, I didn't. It seemed like a reasonably lame the PhD from Harvard or Yale or Berkeley or UC Santa Cruz or something of that sort. But in Rick, in your statement, if this, in looking at the ocean current numbers, the one from Japan kind of hits Washington, and part of it goes north, part of it goes south. And if it's gotten down here to California, although I don't know why they've opened up Washington, Oregon, but it's only a matter of time until all the seafood down in Southern California is going to have the same problem.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a matter of the extent of the concentration. Like, I mean, although, is there any safe level of radiation? I don't know. Kind of like there's no proven safe level of lead, you know?
Well, I guess there are radiation levels that are deemed tolerable or acceptable insofar as we use it rather routinely in medicine, you know, radioisotopic dyes and things like that.
Right.
Well, but the other side of it is before the...
With regard to that question, the bottom line is that in industry wants us to believe that there's acceptable dosage and safe levels. And they'll use the existence of various forms of ionizing radiation that exist in our environment as reasons to dismiss what we add to the environment. But the fact is that there's ephemeral radiation where when you're exposed to it, it is causing cellular or genetic damage that in many cases is repaired by the body. But when you ingest substances that become incorporated into your body, they sit there and irradiate your body indefinitely. And what serious biologists have more or less derived is that there is no safe level of additional exposure to ingested substances being incorporated in the body and irradiating it. Sorry to disappoint the medical industry that wants to sell the stuff to us. And more importantly, let me take a brief out here for a second, because this was the punchline and it dropped off while I was composing the rest of it. So I'll come back with it in a moment.
Okay. And let me interrupt for a second, because we have as we race headlong toward the end of the program,
We have some hopeful news. There is a challenge on the table. An anonymous individual has offered to pony up $100 to meet the next $100 that come in. So that would take out $200 of the $306 deficit that we've got if we can raise that $100, you know, say in the next 15 minutes or so. You know, that's 5 at 20, 20 at 5, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry to break in with that. I also wanted to share an email from Steve in China. I still love saying from Steve in China. Subject line, change the channel. I wonder how many of these wannabe survivalist fakes would be running and screaming for the exits if the feds decided to place them under some form of house arrest, thus preventing them from leaving their little haven of entertainment. This is also why real social protest can't exist in the U.S. Everything is predicated on entertainment, vicarious experience, and convenience. Once you can't get to the Safeway for more groceries or to your weed dealer for a fresh stash, the jig is up. Beyond that, white or black or any color you like, just because your odds of not getting greased by the authorities increases with approximation to whiteness, you're still taking chances by confronting authority in the first place. Seems everyone's looking for an excuse to use deadly force nowadays, and yes, white people are more boring than just about any other sort of human being you can think of. Regards, Steve in China. Steve packs a wallop into his emails. He really, really does.
Hey, Bob, I don't mean to override the power of Steve's comments, but what it was that I wanted to finish my point was...
No, do it. Go ahead. You took a long pause, and I just jumped in. That's all.
Well, I said I was going to, so I wouldn't waste the time, so thank you for filling it.
My pleasure.
And that's... When it comes to the matter of diagnostic and other kinds of medical radiation. In that field, there is a somewhat cognizant balancing out of the damage caused by the imposed radiation versus the expected possible benefits. They actually sit down and have done a perhaps often skewed, but nonetheless conscious analysis of, okay, we're increasing this person's risk of cancer by X amount for the sake of doing this, which may increase his survivability by X amount. What makes sense? Now, that's, of course, balanced against many other considerations, like how much money they make. But there is an awareness that basically all additional radiation poses a problem.
Yeah, in other words, no good radiation.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Hey, I got another note to share with you. Since we brought up Pharma Bro Martin Shkreli. We're all over the place on Friday on the front porch. This comes from Michael in Madison, who keeps his ear to the ground pretty thoroughly and pretty exhaustively on the music scene, among other things. Subject line: Martin Shkreli, wannabe comic book villain. Sorry to rain on the Schadenfreude, but I'm pretty sure Martin Shkreli is out on bail right now because he's been in the news again this week, at least the kind of news I see, because he's, get this, deep breath, sigh, threatening to destroy the new album by the Wu-Tang Clan, or at the very least erase all of the parts performed by one particular Wu-Tang member that has dared to voice criticism against him. It's confusing, but here's the background. And you're not going to hear this on many other progressive radio stations. Sorry, you're just not. Before the Pharma price controversy broke, he paid $2 million at auction for the sole copy of the latest Wu-Tang album, which the public has yet to and perhaps may never hear. Last I checked, Shkreli bragged that he hadn't even bothered to listen to his prize yet. I'm so sick of this prick. He's trying so fucking hard to be a cheesy comic book villain. A little arrest by the feds has done nothing to stifle his arrogance. He's pathetic. Whether he faces prison, I guess that remains to be seen. Side note,
What's even more bizarre is this. In the purchase agreement for the Wu-Tang album, there's a clause stating that one heist and or caper may be attempted at any time with no legal recourse to steal back the album, which if successful would transfer all ownership rights back to the artists. Only current members of the Wu-Tang Clan and or actor Bill Murray, no really, may carry out the heist. Jason Isbell was actually the first to bring the heist clause to my attention after the purchase agreement was made public late last year, calling it the most interesting part of the story. I swear, says Michael, everything I just wrote has been reported as fact. This is not satire, and I'm starting to get a little pissed off that Wu-Tang Clan, with or without Bill Murray, didn't steal the goddamn $2 million record when Shkreli was in jail. Signed, Michael. Wow. Wow. God almighty.
Can I give you an update from the Oregon thing?
Yes, do please.
Your favorite idiot lawyer made another appearance today after the holding hearing or whatever.
Yes.
And he said the whole purpose of accessing the referees was to get attention to an issue that was being ignored. This is in a tweet from KATU News. And then another tweet says, there's no risk of this happening again because phase one has been accomplished, referring to Bundy-led occupation.
Okay, so I'm gonna pass to the billable Rick family on this on this episode of Family Feud. Rick, help.
I missed that. My secretary came into the office. Could you briefly state what you said, Sparky?
Well, Ammon Bundy's lawyer was out in front of the courthouse again to talk to the press.
Yeah.
And he made a couple statements. And then one of them was, the whole purpose of accessing the refuge was to get attention to an issue that was being ignored. And then another statement he meant was, there's no risk of this happening again because phase one has been accomplished, referring to Bundy-led occupation.
Well, phase one implies there's a phase two, so I don't buy what the attorney's saying.
Well, he's trying to make this into a show.
Well, he's trying to make it into like a free speech issue. This was just their political. This was a political protest.
Jesus Christ! Wait a minute. He's trying to say that asserting Second Amendment rights constitute First Amendment rights, Rick.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's political speech by carrying around guns, basically. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of, like, you know...
Okay, so this isn't the fringe on the flag argument. You want to you want to get in on a quick speculation on whether or not the judge will laugh this right out of the courtroom?
Well, no. I mean, whenever you raise a First Amendment argument, you know, it does have a patina of respectability, no matter how thin it might seem to be. But it's not going to prevail. There's no way. I mean,
are you sure in gunned up America?
No. You don't have a First Amendment right to go onto public lands with a gun. Although maybe there was no prohibition against that.
No. Okay, so there. No, but first of all, isn't the one thing that gun grabbing Obama, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, isn't the one thing he did about guns to make it legal to carry them in national parks?
Yeah. I don't know if that includes. It very well may include national monuments and wildlife refuges, and you know who knows what. But the problem is they used the guns to basically, they took the place over. It was an armed occupation is what it was. So
I'm still trying to find a better word than occupation. It was an armed assault.
Takeover. Armed takeover.
It was a heist. Wait. It was a heist.
There you go.
I mean, by the way, weren't there stories that came out, and we're running out of time way too damn fast. Weren't there stories that came out about them going through data files on federal government data files on computers?
Yes.
Didn't they publicly admit to that?
I think they may have.
So yeah. assuming that the feds go in there and recover the computers and whatnot, if forensic experts can tell that documents have been accessed or that data has been breached or anything like that, aren't there federal data crimes that a grand jury could consider in that?
Oh, certainly unauthorized access to, you know, federal documents. It could be, you know, you could have sensitive documents, probably not anything classified, but, you know, sensitive confidential documents, and maybe even documents regarding like individual. I think they had access to people's SS numbers and things like that. So you could throw in a, you know, attempting to access federal documents for purposes of, you know, attempted identity theft.
I mean, I really want these clowns
federal employees.
I'm sorry?
Identifying federal employees.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a crime to access personnel files. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I want to put these guys in a building where they wind up being the last people there, and the building gets demolished when they finally die.
Sort of like Albert Speer, you're thinking?
That would be exactly what I'm thinking.
Have we used the H word yet today? You did, didn't you?
No, we have not.
Don't do it.
Gerald is pissed.
I won't do it. But, you know, the thing is, we wouldn't have to use the H word if we weren't always fighting fascism in America, you know? I mean, so-and-so didn't lose the war. They just moved to America. You know, the Nazis didn't lose. They just moved to America and formed the Republican Party. Or invaded the Republican Party, you know?
Precisely. Hey, very good news as we head out the door. Thank you very kindly to Cindy. Cindy has met the anonymous challenge, so that means $306, not $316, but $306.76 remaining amount has been met. And thank you very kindly, Humboldt Roger. I just saw what you typed in the chat, so at least let people know what you're doing.
What I did was I said I'd match the anonymous donor. Somebody else kicked in the 100, so I'm going to fire off 100. And I thought it was 1676, but somebody has to come up with like $6.76
right
for Bob to get the $50 out of the Scandinavian challenge. So somebody out there, come on, $6.76, you can come up with it.
Beat the Swede.
How about 666?
That leaves us a dime away, and then we're screwed.
I got the dime.
Okay, Roger in Minnesota's in for the dime. You guys are awesome.
How many times we did this on Friday now?
Oh, golly Moses, I can't even begin to say.
Well, tell you what, I'll make it 10, Bob.
Before right. Everybody goes away, I just wanted to say hello.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Well, I've just been sitting here listening. I haven't had very much to really offer to the discussion, except I've been listening and reading and listening and going in and out.
Well, I did see the email you sent along earlier today. The guy who was frustrated with the Hillary realists. I saw that. That was very good.
I thought you would be interested in that. It was Rabbi Michael Lerner from Tikkun. He's here in Berkeley. He's right down the street from me.
No, I enjoy reading his writing. I have on several occasions.
Yeah, but I wanted to say hello and everything. And I'm trying to ease off of all of this stuff around the Oregon thing and everything. I'm really not following it that much. And I'm really trying to ease off of this stuff because it just... I find that I can't remain clear-headed.
Well, for my part, I want to spend more time on Flint. I can't tell you what happened inside my gut when I read that quote from the nurse. You know, well, it's just a few IQ points. It's not the end of the world.
Oh, now I understand where that came from. The thing that really upsets me about that is that they can't go back and fix whatever developmental harm has been done to those
No, this is irreparable damage.
It really upsets me. And whatever they do from here on out, that may help people down the road. But what about the children that have already been affected? What do we do about those kids? And how do we remedy the fact that they were damaged? You know, when it gets to something like that, I just go into irrational apoplectic.
We can talk about it later tonight, Larry.
I understand.
And that's absolutely the truth. We've got to wrap up here.
You're echoing, Larry.
If you would be so kind as to mute, please. Thank you, Larry. It is time to wrap up. The conversation will continue after Malloy at around 12:06 Eastern Standard Time, about 3 hours and 6 minutes from now. And it's really merry and really zany. And in the meantime, I want to thank you all very much for helping us beat the Swede and helping us get to January to the good. And moreover, taking a little bit of stress off, that means I get to pay some bills here in a couple of minutes. Thank you very, very kindly, one and all. I'll be working in the studio playing fun with technology tomorrow. And then come Sunday, I've got meetings to attend and work to do. But somewhere along the way, come Sunday, I'm probably going to just kick back, hopefully with something with a swirly straw in it. Maybe we'll leave the swirly straw go. And a little bit of Cuban contraband, courtesy of, well, Cuba via Canada, etc. Or perhaps Cuba via Mexico. Yeah. And celebrate completing 53 full revolutions of the sun on this sweet little blue-green marble hurtling through the universe. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to you all who keep this independent broadcasting effort on the air. Thank you ever so kindly for your participation in every way in which you so do. You make this something that is inexpressibly a joy to do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, for your longtime moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working people, the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Goodbye now.